It's time for the Apple Watchcast. A new report says how many Apple Watches have been sold to date, and it's a big number. There's a cool new advanced treadmill with GymKit. The iMac Pro is now available. You may soon be able to talk softly to Siri. A new swim tracking patent from Apple. And the Apple Watch saves another life. Reviews of Workouts Plus Plus, Spell Grid 2, and Visual Codes, plus a whole lot more. It's all coming up next on the Apple Watchcast. The Apple Watchcast is brought to you by the wonderful support of our Patreon subscribers. Become a patron of the Apple Watchcast, and for as little as $1 a month, you can help us keep producing this show and get a little something extra in return, like access to bonus episodes, Apple Watchcast gear, and even be a guest on the show. So check out our page at patreon.com/Apple Watchcast to subscribe and become a patron of the Apple Watchcast. This is the Apple Watchcast, episode 218, recorded Sunday, December 17th, 2017. The Watch Whisperer.
It's time for the Apple Watchcast. Apple Watchcast, a podcast dedicated to the Apple Watch.
It's time for the Apple Watchcast, where we talk about any and everything Apple Watch, Apple's most personal and healthy device yet, and the number one watch in the world. I'm your host, Tom, and joining me is Vincent. Welcome to the show, Vincent.
Howdy.
Howdy, howdy. 1 week away from Christmas here.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it, though.
I know, it doesn't. Yeah. But it's upon us. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think you're beyond the point of ordering anything and getting it for Christmas, so we've reached
that. Oh, good Lord, I didn't even know that.
I think we've reached that mark. Also joining us is Chris. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Hey, Merry Christmas, Tom and Vincent, and welcome to winter.
Yes, and I think this is the week where everybody starts looking at alternate plans as far as, let's see, gift cards and what else can I get real quick? Downloads.
I saw something on the news, which I don't watch very often, but I happen to see it, that I think the drop dead date for like overnight shipping where you pay super premiums like Thursday or Friday. I think they'll even deliver it Saturday.
Oh, okay. Yeah, if you want to pay a premium, I guess.
Yeah, if you want to double pay or something, right. you're still okay.
I noticed there's a couple of items on Apple's website that you can't get for the holiday. There's no way. They're out. Either sold out or back ordered for a while.
That'd be the HomePod?
Yeah, there'd be that for sure. But also like AirPods.
Yeah.
You won't make the holidays for that one. And, you know, good luck finding them in a store. I think it's going to be another big year for AirPods, actually, because they were so scarce last season. It sounds like they're getting a little scarce mm-hmm. now, too. But anyway, I want to mention up front here for people who listen to the show, may be a little confused as to what happened last week. And we recorded our show, just like a normal show, and I've never kind of run across these issues before, but I don't want to get into too much inside baseball here, but I record this on a big iMac, an older machine, and I recently got the new MacBook Pro. And my thought was, you know, I record this in Adobe Audition, and I run our voices through a number of filters when we're done with the show. I match the volume, so we're each at the same level, and I wish every podcast would do that. But I also run them through take out the background noise, all this kind of stuff. But these filters take a while to run on this older iMac. And I thought, hey, I've got a new MacBook Pro. Let me just copy the files over and see what this, I bet it's super fast, right? Save me some time. So I set it up like I normally do. I just, in the desktop, went ahead and shared the iMac Pro and copied the files to the documents folder of the iMac Pro. And it took a little while. These are big files, talking several gigs or more of data. Excuse me. And when I looked at them on the MacBook Pro, they had a little cloud symbol next to them. And they were still uploading. So I realized that the documents folder on this new MacBook Pro was in the cloud. It was in iCloud. And I was like, ah, I don't want to have to wait for that to copy. So I trashed the file.
Oh, no.
And then I went back to my computer and I said, you know what? I'm just going to drag these to the desktop. That way I know they're there, right? So I drag them to the desktop of a MacBook Pro and it does the same thing. And I'm like, what? So I look in settings, and apparently on this new MacBook Pro, when I set it up, and I don't remember this, but I have set the desktop and the documents folder to be in the cloud. So anything that hits your desktop, anything that hits the documents folder goes, uploads into iCloud.
It's a feature.
It is, and it's great, except if you're dealing with gigs of data, files that are audio that you cannot do, you know, I can't open those files in the cloud, right? And edit them. So I'm like, so I trashed them off the MacBook Pro, go back to my iMac, and I'm going to copy them directly to the hard drive. And they're not there anymore. Because when I copied them to the desktop, it didn't copy. It moved. And I'd already trashed them. And there was no way to recover them. I went through iCloud. I called Vincent. It's like, Vincent, help. Is there anything I can do? There wasn't. It was gone. And I've never experienced that where I've completely lost a file. Now, luckily, I do a backup as we record to a little digital recorder, which is a mixed thing. Our voices aren't on separate tracks, but it's all mixed together on a little digital recorder to a little SD card. So I know I had that as long as the batteries didn't run out and the SD card wasn't full halfway through recording. I was okay. And I was fine. I finally had to resort to editing from that. But the problem is now when I run these filters, I have them set for each individual person. So now I've got to go in and tweak this to where our voices sort of sound okay, you know, and then I got to run the same thing, but it's all mixed together. I can't cut if we speak over each other. I can't do that sort of thing. So it took a long, long time. So I'm finished. I finally get done and it's okay. And I go to upload to iTunes, right? And I do this, I've done this 216 times at that point, right? For this particular podcast. And normally it takes, I think at the most, I've ever waited between 5 to 10 minutes. Usually within 2 or 3 minutes, it's up there and posted. 30 minutes go by, I still don't see it. That's when I sent out the Facebook notice. It's like, is anybody receiving this? I contacted Apple, and it took them a day or two to get back to me, but they did. And eventually it showed up. And I've never had that happen either, where it just, for some reason, it took over 24 hours for it to show up. So I'm hoping at the end of this show, when I'm going to be a little gun shy, if you will, when I hit these kind of upload button here to make sure it goes to iTunes that it's going to post. So it was fun last week. That was a fun week.
You didn't see editing. Or hear of any other podcasts having that issue?
No, but you know, everything I read, and I knew this, said that it can take up to 24 to 48 hours sometimes for a podcast to show up. And I'm like, I've never experienced anything beyond 10 minutes. So anyway, the freaking iCloud settings kind of got me. So
right. And I guess it never showed up in your recently deleted folder in iCloud.
No, it never had a chance. I deleted it too quickly. Had I waited, ironically, it would have been fine. But just a word of warning out there, check your iCloud settings when you update and whatnot, because they've altered the way this thing works now. I did not know. I knew about documents folder, and I knew about, you know, that's for documents like pages and numbers and, you know, Keynote files and all that kind of Apple apps, right? But I had no idea your desktop could be in the cloud. Did you know that?
No, that's it's a High Sierra thing, or is this the latest update?
No, I'm only on Sierra. So be careful about that. Anyway, thanks for everyone who did, you know, respond. They did get it fine. I knew we were okay when I looked at like Overcast and these other providers. They already had the episode, but iTunes didn't. So I realized it was an iTunes issue. So anyway.
Yeah.
crazy.
So, I mean, iTunes is just another provider that just reads the RSS feed and displays it. So.
Yeah,
it's not the source. You can always go to the site and see the latest episode, right?
Yeah, you can. That's a good point. You can always go to our website at applewatchcast.com and listen to the current ones, because those are instantly there. Those are there before anything. Also, a programming note here that this may actually be our last regular show for the year. Next week, which is Christmas Eve, we hope, we haven't confirmed yet, we hope to bring you an interview with a hardware manufacturer that makes some neat stuff for the Apple Watch. It's not confirmed yet, so I don't want to say for sure. And if not, if that doesn't occur, then we'll be taking that week off for the holidays. And then the following week, which is New Year's Eve, we're going to have our annual Best Of show, where we award apps and hardware for the year. We'll each have our own selections, and I can't wait. It should be a lot of fun. It's kind of an interesting year for the Apple Watch.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's happening with the rest of the year. And then next year will be even more interesting than that, because I'm going to be traveling a lot. So we'll be doing mobile shows. And if everything goes well, you won't be able to tell the difference. but I doubt
it. Well, with my travel too, Tom, we'll get to see how it works, you know, at the other side of the world. So that'd be kind of fun.
Yeah, we're going to be all over the place.
All over, yes.
Yeah, then that's good. We should. That's, you know, with technology, we should be able to do that these days.
Absolutely.
Speaking of technology, I don't know why that kind of ties in or not, but have either of you seen the new Star Wars yet?
No, negative. Have not.
I have not either. Good. So this is a spoiler-free episode. I'm actually going to see it tomorrow. So,
all right.
Yeah, I'm tired of avoiding the internet at this point. And Andy Anako actually mentioned that. He said, you know, when the Star Wars came out, he goes, I was, you know, excited for it, couldn't wait. That's why I went to go see it. He goes, same this time, except I also want to continue to use the internet. So,
well, you know, my family is not a Star Wars family. It's me. And I think I might have mentioned this in an episode, I guess, on this podcast, but I was like, how old was I? Like 12 or 13 when the first one came out. I guess I just told everyone my age, but you know, it's been like every decade and every movie's been great. So I'll have to go find someone to go see it with.
I wouldn't use the word great for the prequels, but that's just me.
Well, you know,
effects are amazing.
You're right. The very first three, which is 4, 5, and 6 are always, even though they were 70s and early 80s kind of cheesy kind of movies, they were really good.
I meant the prequels, the ones that came out in the early 2000s that Lucas did. Episode 1 through 3. Everybody pretty much agrees that those are flawed.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they can redo them.
I don't know. I caught one of them. Wow, because they've been playing this stuff, right? I caught part of the first one, The Phantom Menace. Oh, my goodness. The acting.
Yes.
It was cringeworthy, especially looking back.
Yes, so. And some of those actors are well-known and good actors, but for some reason, sometimes maybe it's the writing and the acting together just didn't click.
No, I blame the director.
Yeah, true.
Lucas, I mean, when you get a good take and you know when you don't, right? Mm-hmm. And to just say, yeah, great, we got it and move on? No. Mm-hmm. I don't think so. Anyway, this is not a Star Wars podcast. There is a bunch of stuff to talk about. Not a bunch, but there's some other things happening outside of the Apple Watch that are kind of happening in the Apple world, if you will. But anything else you guys want to mention up front here before we dive into this week's news?
Let's get it rolling.
Get it rolling. All right, here we go.
Dive in head first.
The Apple Watchcast News.
All right, time for the news. And first up here is some good news for the very end of the year. This comes to us from Canalys, I guess, an analyst company. Mm-hmm. They're saying that Apple has apparently shipped, and this is to date, this is from the launch in 2015 till now, 34.4 million Apple Watches is what they're estimating.
Worldwide.
That's complete. Mm-hmm. And they're saying that accounts for a little over half of all smartwatches ever shipped. Ever.
Wow.
So,
all right, let's go back to some of those articles in 2015 that said Apple Watch is a failure.
Exactly. it's doing quite well. But I have a question. If there's 34.4 million sold, why isn't our listenership higher? That's a lot of people. We've got such a small fraction of those. What are we doing wrong?
This is all three versions, right?
I mean, it's total. Yeah, it's complete.
Yeah, total.
And so maybe divide that by three for people who bought three different watches.
What would you use for an average selling price too? Because I used $400 as an average selling price, and that was $14 billion.
Yeah, see, alone, and this has been commented before, and I've said it before, if the Apple Watch business of Apple was a company in and of itself, it would be a runaway success.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just the Apple Watch. So anyway, again, take this all with a grain of salt because, you know, Apple doesn't release these numbers. This is all, you know, an interpretation. There's many ways they do that. But they're probably not too far off, I would imagine.
I mean, you count the number of CPUs that are made, right? I mean, it's a one-to-one. You count noses instead of heads.
So. Yeah, I guess so. but that's a stunning number. And what gets me is they've now reached the point where they've sold more than everything else combined ever. That's pretty mind-boggling.
Wow.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's good or bad from competition standpoint. But
and what is that, 2.5 years?
2015, yeah.
2.75 years, maybe.
Yeah, getting close. Yeah, 2.75, just about. Wow, we've been doing that this long. Yes, we have. What else is going on this week? Apple released this is some new betas. This is iOS 11.2.5 and watchOS 4.2.2. And then there's also a tvOS 11.2.5. Now, these are all minor performance updates and bug fixes. What was kind of interesting, though, was that in iOS 11, and I'd forgotten about this, that apparently Apple was going to debut at some point AirPlay 2, which allows you to multi-room stream from a single device, which kind of takes on, what's that company, Sonos, right? Sonos is a manufacturer of speakers you can put all throughout your house and control them all, right, together or separately, whatever. Well, apparently AirPlay 2 is pretty much going to Sherlock some of that, minus the hardware, right? And that was supposed to be out, and apparently it's still not out with this update. So that's not there. Now, as far as the watchOS 4.2.2, the release notes don't show anything, so it's probably just bug fixes and performance.
Yeah, I tried to find stuff, and there wasn't anything out there, so it's just got to be, as you said, more technical.
Yeah, so that update.
Or bug fix.
Right, and that's fine. No new features coming.
Did you guys upgrade the iOS on your phone this week?
This
11.2.1, I think it was.
I don't know.
I think at the notification, I don't think I've had a chance to actually apply it. My watch takes a while to do anything these days.
Yeah, you're still rocking the beta there. So
right, it's the OG.
Yeah, you're going old school.
Is it starting to smoke when you do things with that thing, man?
I'm pushing it to its limits.
Listen to us. It's only 2.5 years old. Man. Okay, what else is going on? Oh, I just, you know what? As someone who runs, I just can appreciate this so much. There's this new treadmill. It's called Skill Run. And it is amazing. And it actually works with Apple Gym Kit. And the image of it looks super little high tech. Mm-hmm. But it's faster and wider. And it's probably the most advanced one you've ever seen in your life. It can do incline and hill training, like a lot of them do, but it goes up to 25%.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also declines minus 3%. So that's kind of nice when you get really, really tired. But what's interesting is, okay, it goes faster than most treadmills. Now, most of them will max out at about 15.5 miles per hour. This one goes to 18.6. So that's pretty fast.
Those are the days you're feeling frisky.
Yeah. And it's wider than most. It's 22 inches wide instead of 20. So you don't feel like you're going to step off the darn thing. But the coolest part here is it works with GymKit. So this machine will share data with your Apple Watch with just a tap. So you'll get what they're calling biofeedback. So it tells you where you're putting your weight, in other words, where you're stepping, your cadence, and whether your stride is even. So that will help you adjust mm-hmm. how you run, and the feedback is color-coded. I mean, that's pretty cool. That's really digging into it.
That when I run, the pace and especially my step, I think I do have inconsistent steps. And I think when I read about running, that's the key element is how to use the right way to use your feet to, you know, contact the ground and the pace that you use from a step standpoint. It'd be good to know that.
I love the fact that now the Apple Watch with this very expensive mm-hmm. machine, granted, can now help correct your running. That's yet one more thing the watch is doing, which is super cool. And they also have this big power training on this thing. They simulate parachute running. Have you ever seen that?
Yes, I have.
Mm-hmm. So they can kind of mimic that. And then the other thing it does is a sled push.
Wow.
Which it does an impression of that. Initially, it's very strong resistance, and it lessens as the faster you go. So it creates the feeling of actually pushing a sled on grass. Mm. I mean, that is amazing that they're coming out with that. Now, this is in pounds. It's 15,500 pounds, which is what? $19,000?
Yeah, $20,000.
About 20 grand.
Roughly.
Yeah, you could have the best treadmill in the world here for 20 grand.
Wow. You guys have a treadmill as well?
I have a very old one in the garage.
I don't. Mm. I don't have it. I don't have one.
And I only break it out. It you know, it folds up.
Yeah.
And I put it aside, and I only drag it out when it's super cold and I really need to run. The weather's really bad and I want to get in a run. I'll go out in the garage, lower that thing and jump on. I don't enjoy it. I'll put the iPad up there and watch something or whatever, but I kind of really, really don't like running on treadmills. And this sounds like this might actually make it kind of enjoyable.
Right.
Can you get this treadmill delivered to your house in Houston before Christmas?
I don't think so.
it's neat. Even the way they built it shows speed, right? Because most treadmills look like they're sitting there. This one's all kind of leaning forward, like move forward. It kind of looks neat.
Yeah. And the graphics on the screen are kind of cool.
Yeah. So the one graphic, I guess that guy's doing, that's what he's doing. He's doing he's pushing on the handles pretty hard. He's doing the sled.
Yeah. He's doing the sled move there. I'll put a link in the show notes. If someone has an extra 20 grand laying around and likes to run, they can pick this up. Anyway, it's kind of cool. The Apple Watch.
Yeah,
it's one more use of an Apple Watch I'd not seen. You know, it's one thing to get audio feedback on your run. It's another when you're on a device that can actually tell you how you're running. That's mm-hmm. pretty cool. Mm-hmm. What else is going on this week? Okay, not particularly related to the Apple Watch, but finally, we mentioned this last week, and sure enough, again, I think Tim Cook listens to our show. I really do, because it happened right after the show was released. The iMac Pro is now available to order.
It is.
First orders will arrive December 27th if you get that pre-order in on time. Now, this is the Darth Vader version, if you will. To continue our Star Wars theme here. It's the dark colored iMac Pro. And what's really interesting is all the peripherals for it are also dark. The keyboard and the mouse and the trackpad, they're all in this space gray accessories, which is kind of cool. Now, this machine, they're touting it as the most powerful Mac ever. It even beat the current Mac Pro. So that's pretty interesting. Now, that one's going to be revamped. We don't know when, but hopefully sometime soon they're going to have a brand new Mac Pro that'll be more modular, because that was the big knock against it was mm-hmm. too much of a closed box. So if you want to get one of these, you'll get 4 Thunderbolt 3 ports, 4 USB 3 ports, 1080p FaceTime camera, support for 2 additional 5K displays or 4 4K displays. Wow.
Jeez.
That is amazing. Now,
yes.
You can purchase. Now, I'm wondering, can you get the the mouse and the keyboard and trackpad separate.
Man, I really want to.
Yeah. So you could put them on against, you know, anybody could have those.
Right. I've always wondered when they're going to come out with the wireless keyboard with the butterfly kind of, you know, yeah, the spring, right?
Mm-hmm. With the, what do you mean? The
God, what do you call that? The spring mechanism?
Oh, well, the thing now is, okay, I've got this new MacBook Pro, right? Mm-hmm. It's got the new super low profile keys.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I like it yet.
You don't like that?
I'm kind of preferring the slightly higher ones, just I guess because I'm used to them. Uh-huh. But it seems a little too clicky to me. But again, okay. I'll get used to it.
Yeah.
Over time, and I would have to assume that's what these are, right?
I don't know. I've seen that the current peripherals that they sell are the normal keyboards.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. But they don't have that one yet.
Okay, well, maybe not then. Yeah, I was going to say, why would they do separate ones? Anyway, if you're interested, there's two variations. There's an 8-core and a 10-core. This is, just sounds ridiculous. And if that's not enough, a 14 and an 18-core are going to be available, but they're not shipping for 6 or 8 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah, it takes a while to build those cores, I guess. They list kind of the what you can do with this machine, how much faster you can do things. Like developers can run multiple virtual machines and test environments and compile code up to 2.4 times faster. So I guess, you know, if you're in a business, time is money. Mm-hmm. This makes a lot of sense to... Oh, and by the way, we didn't talk about the cost here. Starts at $49.99, and I don't mean $50. And it maxes out at $13,199.
Still less than a treadmill.
That's what?
Yes.
Yeah, it is. You're right. Actually, at a certain configuration, you could buy two of these for the
exactly price of
that good treadmill.
Good. Do you get a free gold Apple Watch?
You should. For that price. I was listening to a different podcast, and they were talking about the cost of this machine. And they were just like, wow, just, you know, starting at that price. And it's like short memory here, okay? Because I remember a while, not, well, I'm going to date myself again here, Chris, just like you did. But there was a machine called the Mac FX. Okay, this was back in the 90s, I think. And we used to purchase them for the agency, and they would be in the $8,000 to $9,000 range. If you maxed out a Mac FX, it would typically cost that. And a lot of our other systems, even the regular machines, were $4,000 to $5,000 each. So it's how quickly we forget and how easily we kind of become used to this price of technology, right? I think everybody's used to this $1,200 or $1,500 mark now. But
right,
high-end machines used to always be at this price. This is actually one heck of a deal for what you're getting.
Mm. Well, it's for a different user base, too. It's not true for us at right home, you know, watching movies or running Excel spreadsheets.
Oh, no, not at all. The normal iMac is way, way more powerful and even overkill for that. This is for, okay, video editors, right?
Right.
You can edit up to 8 streams of 4K video, or you can edit... 4.5K raw red video, which comes straight from the camera raw, unprocessed. You can do 8K ProRes at full resolution in real time without rendering. I mean, unless, I know this doesn't make sense for people unless you've actually done video editing, but this is phenomenal.
Does it say how big the screens are? How big the unit is itself?
It's 27, is it not?
27?
I think so. But you can, you know, most of the people who get these are going to add external other monitors to them as well. But that, it's pretty spectacular. But yeah, for most people, this is complete overkill. Hey, I bet I could run the audio filters in Audition pretty quick with this.
Get one to test with.
Yeah, exactly. But what Apple has not said in all of this is the fate of the Mac Mini. You know, this is great news for the Mac, but there's still no word as to... You think they're going to kill it?
It's going to come inside the HomePod.
Is that what they're doing? I don't know. Is that the delay?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
Plug it a monitor output on there.
Well, I tell you, if they have room, why don't they cram an Apple TV in there too?
There yeah, go. Exactly.
Put it all in one. It's a Mac Mini, Apple TV, and a HomePod. Double the price, and you'll still sell a billion of them. All right. Moving on. What else? Oh, by the way, so either one of you put in your order yet for this MacBook Pro?
Can it fit my backpack when I travel?
How big's your backpack?
Oh, I guess that's a no then.
Okay. what else is going on? From our patent world, Apple invents an accurate radio navigation system for swimmers wearing an Apple Watch. I think we talked about this in the past a little bit.
I'm pretty sure it was an Apple crap.
Oh, you think it was an Apple crap? Because it sounded familiar to me. So maybe they applied for it and now they've actually got the patent.
Okay.
And there's a little more detail here how it actually works in this description.
Yeah, they do mention more about it. So, okay, without getting too technical, basically what's happening here is you're wearing this device on your wrist as you're swimming. And as you put your arm up out of the water and down into the water and stroke back, your arm is actually moving at a faster pace than your body. So it's giving the watch inaccurate information about your pace. So Apple has configured this algorithm to know when you come up out of the water and when it goes back into the water. And it's using, how did they put it? I thought this was pretty funny. They said that the patent explains how to correct the velocity component with a mathematical solution too complicated for this report. So they don't even want to explain how it works, but that's what Apple got a patent for. And it makes sense, right? You can't track it accurately if your arm is moving faster than your body because your watch is attached to your arm. So unless you somehow strapped it around your leg, I guess if you wore it on your wrist or your ankle, it'd be a whole different thing, wouldn't it? But anyway, so man, they're getting, pardon the pun, deep into figuring out the swimming thing here. And it's for all different types of strokes of swimming.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. I mean, it looks like the stick figure, they literally use stick figures in the patent. It looked like a freestyle stroke, but I guess, yeah.
It looks like the little stick figures wearing the latest yellow sport band. So to me,
the one they released last week, we talked about.
Yeah,
you can see from the space shuttle.
I'll put a, was it called Flash or something? I'll put a link in the show notes to this diagram so you can see it. It's pretty funny.
Tom, and this is why they've shipped 34.4 million versus other competition. This kind of level of research.
Yeah, it's kind of fanatical here, isn't it? But that's in a good way.
This
is the kind of detail I think that Steve Jobs would demand, right? They'd figure out an algorithm. He said, it's not good enough. You know what, guys? I went for a swim this morning and it wasn't right, so fix it. Wow. Man, they're going to be able to tell everything from the watch. So look for that. If you're a swimmer, there's going to be some better accuracy coming to your workouts. And then this next one, again, it's not really... I guess it's kind of related. It's related to the Apple Watch. Of course it is. Another patent. And in this one, Apple is trying to make Siri detect if you're whispering. And Siri will actually whisper back. Which makes perfect sense if you think about
it. Yes.
How many times have you been in a situation where you want to do Siri, but it's just not socially cool to do it because you don't want to speak too loud. You don't want people to hear the response, right? It becomes embarrassing.
Is there any a good time to be socially speaking to Siri?
I guess not.
I kind of only do it in private.
You do? Okay. Maybe that's something we all need to get over, right? At some point, or else it'll never be useful, right? But this is kind of cool. So it's a patent they filed back in 2016. And it talks about, so if you're like in a movie theater or any situation where a normal voice is not, or a normal volume level is not possible. And it's true because if you think about it, when you whisper to someone, there's this unspoken thing that they think you're trying to be quiet, so they usually whisper back, right? You know, have you ever whispered to someone and had them just yell at you at a normal loud voice?
Very true.
Very rare.
You just have to hold the device to your ear to hear it, I suppose, but that's the point.
That's the point is, yeah, mm-hmm. is it can pick it up as a, and again, it's something you would think that they would have done a while back, but anyway, we'll see. It's a patent.
You know, sometimes, Tom, you like to whisper even in a loud kind of venue that you're in. You know, if you can whisper and it would, you know, block out all the sound around you and just hear you, that would be even better.
Right. And I think, you know, this is a patent. Doesn't mean it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But they've patented it, so no one else can do it. Let's see. What else is going on? So look for that coming up. You'll be able to whisper to your watch.
I sure will, Tom.
That was
not right. So you're the watch whisperer. Is that what yes. you become? Okay.
It's like watching an episode of golf.
Yeah, exactly. He's approaching
or NPR radio. I'm not sure.
Okay. One more story. And I think we may have covered this exact one. I'm not sure. The name sounds familiar, but the situation seems a little different. Apple Watch, again, saves a man's life by alerting him to a heart attack. Okay, so this guy is Scott Killian, who before he turned 50, he underwent a bunch of health tests to make sure he's healthy, rule out any concerns. All the tests came back with good news, so he's pretty much cleared. Then one night, while he was sleeping, his Apple Watch, which he wears to sleep to track his sleeping patterns, alerted him via HeartWatch, was the app that his resting heart rate was elevated during sleep. He then had some mild indigestion, which is signs of a potential heart attack. So he went and visited the ER as a precaution. The hospital then tested his EKG, and the reports came back normal, despite the fact that his Apple Watch was still reporting that his heart rate was elevated. It was only after they took a blood test that it was discovered that an elevated enzyme that signals a heart attack has occurred or is occurring showed up. So his surgeon told him that he said had he kept sleeping, he probably wouldn't have woken up. He would have died in his sleep.
Wow.
So I'm not sure if we covered this exact story. We've done many like this, but since this just came out, I think this is probably a new one. Unbelievable. Right.
Yeah, we haven't connected the heart rate to taking a blood test to the enzyme. I don't think we've talked about that link before.
Right.
Mostly it's been elevated heart rate, go in, EKG, do something. This is incredible, I think.
It is. I don't know. So that just tells me wear your watch to bed. Track your sleep, right? Especially if there's any history of heart condition in your family or you're at a certain age where you want to monitor that. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, I didn't know what the actual elevated heart rate is. I mean, it's 100 beats per minute when you're resting. I mean, it seems kind of low.
100?
100. It's considered elevated.
Hmm.
So if you're just sitting around and it goes above 100, then that's considered tachycardia.
I guess. What's your normal resting heart rate?
Well, it says a typical person is 60 to 70.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if it's at 100, that's not good.
Yeah. It's not good.
30 to 40% higher, so I can see where that comes into play.
Yeah, there's got to be a reason it's doing that, right? Mm-hmm. Especially if it's consistent, right? Mm-hmm. If it's just a little quick spike, that's one thing. But if it's like most of the night, not good. Now, it's interesting, though, the EKG did nothing. And we were just talking about the fact that you can now get an EKG in a band, which is still great. But this is a case where it still didn't show up. So, yeah, wear that watch at night and check your heart rate. I need to go back and look at mine. I actually don't look. And I know I have it set, so I guess I shouldn't worry, right? It would tell me if...
But your heart rate, you're saying? You don't check it?
I don't go back and look at the stats, is what I'm saying.
Ah, gotcha.
I haven't gone back and looked in a while, but then again, I haven't felt bad and it hasn't alerted me to anything. So, but yeah, go ahead and make sure that you've set yours, right, to alert you when it's above a certain number, because Very, very important. Very cool. What else is going on? Oh, yeah, they killed net neutrality. And what else? Is that it?
What? I didn't hear you. That came across really badly.
You came across garbled already, right? They're already throttling us down. No, actually, it's not dead yet. It's like Monty Python. Because the FCC voted to do that, but it still has to go through Congress, does it not? Is what I understood. So, you know, call your congressman, write them, and let them know that you don't want this to happen. And I don't want to get in, and we can do a whole show on this, but, you know, as a podcaster, I think it is important that we at least speak up and mention this. And I've never really done this on the show, but, you know, from a political standpoint, and this isn't really politics, this is technology, is, you know, just leave it the way it is. It's fine. Because what's going to happen, or what has the potential to happen when this goes through, is that small podcasts like us or other small businesses that start up, developers with apps and stuff like that, won't be able to compete with the big guys because they can't afford to pay to get the better streaming. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if a third party wants to create this wonderful podcast app that streams podcasts, they may not be able to afford to do it because it may just cost too much down the road because they've removed neutrality. So anyway, I'm sure you can find a lot more information about it online. I'm not going to give you anything here, but it's not over yet. So I did find an interesting thing. It was on Facebook. It was a bot, Vincent, that this bot, if you text a number to a certain number, you text, I forget what the word was. Anyway, it then automatically asks you questions. What's your name? Where do you live? Mm-hmm. And then it tells you who your representatives are. And then it says, what do you want to tell them? And you type in what you want, and it sends out the information to all of them.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. So, and by the way, it will let you do that every day. You know, yeah. And tell it to remind you to do it every day. So if you continue to send them, you know, things about like net neutrality or anything else you want to let your representative know, it's kind of a neat way to do it.
I think the site's a battleforthenet.com.
Is that what it is?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyway,
you can go there.
So that happened this week.
Sounds like the next Star Wars episode.
Episode 9. Battle for what? Battle for the net?
Battle for the net.
What do other countries do? If there's any listeners out there, what does other countries, how does their net neutrality work or not work? Be interesting to know.
Well, the problem is it's going to affect big companies that will affect those people in other countries. Netflix, things like that. All of it can be affected that way. In fact, Netflix is really up in arms for this. They're fighting it as well. So, I mean, imagine your provider suddenly decides that they're not getting enough money from Netflix, so anybody who tries to stream it with that provider, they're going to throttle it down to a certain speed. So it makes it unwatchable. That's what we're talking about. I mean, not that they will, but it gives them the ability to, and that's wrong. So,
well, I heard there's 6,000 lobbyists working on the tax bill, so I wonder how many lobbyists are working on this one.
I think there's a few. Maybe enough to do it. But anyway.
Yeah, there might be a comma in that number. Who knows?
Yeah. Anything else happen this week?
No.
Okay. Wow, end of the news kind of on a downer there. All right. Well, maybe we'll get better here with reviews. So
here we go. It's not over till it's over, Tom.
That's true. It's not over till it's over. Here we go.
The Apple Watchcast. App Reviews.
All right, time for app reviews. And once again, I forgot to ask each of you what you have. So hopefully we don't duplicate here. Vincent, why don't you go first?
Sure. I have a pretty simple and fun game here if you're a word nerd. It's called Spell Grid 2. And it's one of those games where you're searching on a grid of letters. All the possible combinations of words. So on the phone, you can play it. It takes hours. if your vocabulary is limited. But like you basically get presented with 9 letters in a kind of a 3x3 grid. And it's amazing that 9 letters can spell on the first level alone with 61 different letters, words of varying length. The second level was 130 words. I mean, I'm like, okay, you'd think that, you know, with 9 letters, it'd be difficult to find words. But man, with this game, you have to go through and find all the words before you can move on to the next level. And there are certain words that you don't even know. And thank goodness, if you tap on the word, you get the definition. So
there you go. Okay.
I'm like, okay, I get it. What's cool is as you move along, it does give you some hints, and it'll give you a list of all the words that you're finding and a couple of letters so you know where to start or what's in the middle. The game is not timed, and so you kind of just
good.
Yeah, you spend your time just going through it. On the watch, same type of thing. You get presented with the 9 letters in a grid, but instead of being able to kind of swipe between the letters and connect them, you are tapping on them, and you tap create the words. You're only for each level, you're only required to find 10 words, which makes it a lot simpler to play. And as you tap them out, a minimum of 3 letters, you press the last letter to submit your entry. So that's unique. Usually you would think that it kind of automatically submits it. But yeah, once you're done, you tap the last letter again. You can quit and end your streak if you force press. You can restart the level, that kind of thing. You can also look at the words that you've found in a list. Fun little game. On my watch, it runs a little slow. It loads a little slow. But good news for you beta owners out there.
It does work. question for you. It's free, right?
It's absolutely free.
No ads?
It doesn't have a complication or anything like that. But you can scroll to it and find it. It's a pretty fun game. Really quick.
Now, there are in-app purchases I see here for clues.
For clues,
you
yes.
You can buy clues. Help.
Yeah, and that's on the phone app itself.
I was looking at some of the reviews here, and the headline of one of them is awesome. It says, "I'd hate this if it wasn't fun."
It's got really good ratings.
Game. I love that. I'd hate this if it wasn't fun. Perfect. Where'd you find this thing?
You know, random searches.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Spell Grid 2. Mm-hmm. Nice.
Oh gosh, it sounds like a hard game though, Vincent.
It gets really hard, you would think, about like you have like 2 words left and you're like, I don't know what it is.
Yeah. that's when you go in and you buy the clues for $1 or $2, right? That's right. All right, Chris, what do you got?
All right, Tom. Well, my app is called Workouts Plus, and it was just recently released. I think both Vincent and I saw it, and you might have seen it too. I think it might have been earlier this week or the week before. And I think I just reviewed Pedometer Plus recently. So this company that does all these Plus apps, they're pretty good. So let me play something for you here real quick. Hopefully you can hear it. Mm-hmm. Let me get to it.
It's time for the Apple Watch Cast, Apple Watch OS 4.2.
Do you hear that?
Who is that?
And we try it out live.
That was a podcast downloaded to my watch playing independently.
Nice. And you downloaded that through Workouts.
On a workout app. So I digressed a little bit. Let me start from the beginning. But okay. I wanted to kind of hit the punchline quickly.
Nice.
And I had no idea you could do this when I was starting up the app. But first of all, it's a nice app. It basically, you can use it in lieu of the exercise app on your phone or watch. But it integrates into it. So if you started an exercise on this workout, it goes into your other your exercise app, your activities app on your watch and your phone. But so let me just talk through the app on the phone first. But basically, you configure it. So there's you know 20 different exercises, and when you configure it, you're basically just talking about the data you want to see and how you want to see it configured on the screen, things like that. It's basic configuration. Then it has the workouts. So as soon as I uploaded the app and opened it and signed in, it went and got all the workouts I have on my watch and phone and listed them here. So they're all here. And you can punch a workout, and there's all kinds of data related to that workout. Gives you your heart rate, the speed, your active calories and all the things you like to see, duration, the time, the distance, and the date. So it's kind of neat. It's a little more graphical than the activities app that you get today. And then you can actually put your thumb or finger on the actual heart rate or speed or calories graph and just move your back and forth, and it tells you what the numbers were as you move. So it's, you know, that's maybe overkill, but it's kind of cool. But you can see your heart rate through your run. You can see your speed through your run. And I notice sometimes my speed varies a little bit based on my arm swing. And I think that I'm starting to see that as I get a little tired, my arm doesn't swing as much. And even though I'm going exactly the same on the treadmill, I run a slower mile pace, which is kind of weird. But anyway, that's the workouts. Then you have your stats. And this is a kind of a neat look on the phone. It basically has a graphical view of every exercise you've ever had. So I've done runs in India. I've done runs in South Carolina. I've done runs in Ohio. They're all listed here on a map. It's kind of odd. Hmm. And then at the bottom, it tells you how many hours. And I haven't figured out if it's at the top, it's a graphical view. It says I've run 584 hours, but I don't know if it's this year or what. But at the bottom, it says
that was a long run.
1,719 miles for 12 days. So that sounds like that's all my data versus the one at the top maybe just be this year. So I haven't figured that out yet.
Right.
But the personal stats gives you all kinds of information. But here's the cool part. The next little tab is podcasts. I was like, huh, what is this? So you can just hit the plus button, and it brings up all your podcasts you're subscribed to on your phone. And I said, let me look at the Apple Watchcast. I hit that. Do you want to download to your watch? I was like, sure. It took about 20 minutes, and now it is on my watch. So the Apple Podcast episode 217 is on my watch as an independent podcast.
Took 20 minutes to download?
Yeah, I was walking around a little bit, I'm not sure if moving around helped or not.
Okay.
I did download an episode of 30 for 30 podcast by ESPN, and that didn't take very long at all. Hmm. So I don't know. It might have been me or where I was or what I was doing.
Or it might have been a shorter episode than ours.
Yeah, it was. I think it was a 14-minute episode.
Well, yeah, okay.
Versus an hour and 15-minute episode.
Wow, we're long-winded.
Well, our podcast size is usually around 35 megabytes.
Mm.
In that neighborhood, 35 to 40, depending on how long the episode is. And usually they're an hour at least. So if you're talking about a 14-minute show, yeah, that was significantly smaller file size.
Mm-hmm. Well, what 30 for 30 does, they have a 55 to 60 minute episode. It's a podcast that kind of links to the TV show that they have. Mm-hmm. And then they do these 15 minute episodes the following week as a bonus. And basically they ask a set of questions. What to the directors or the producers, you know, what did you expect? What didn't you expect? So it's kind of a follow-up. It's always a shorter episode, but they have full episodes. This is just kind of a, you know, bonus episode. But the thing was, it was all of a sudden on my watch, and also, so I don't want to get ahead of myself. So that's all on the phone. And then you have a bunch of settings. Basically you can go dark mode. You can start a workout with Siri, things like that. You can link to Pedometer Plus, things that all link together for the Plus app. So that's on the phone. It's actually kind of cool. And then on your watch, basically it's launching, you basically launch a workout and you pick the workout you want, just like in the activity app. It gives you a pause, gives you an end workout. It gives you a lock. You can lock your screen. So I guess if you're going to go into a quick swim, you just lock the screen. You don't have to go into the lock screen mode in the control center. And then it gives you on the watch the configuration you picked on the phone, how you want to see the data and where you want to see the data, and it's active. And then it gives you the podcast. And basically, there's downloaded podcasts and stream podcasts. So you can listen to, I guess, anything that's on your phone. You're just streaming it through the watch and then your AirPods. But the cool thing was, you know, I played that. I hit play and it was right on the watch. I didn't need AirPods or any kind of ear device to listen to it. It's public. It's right there. So that was kind of cool. So at first, I wasn't really sure how I was going to like this app because, hey, I got the activities app. I've got all these other apps. But this kind of pulls everything together. The only thing I haven't figured out, it doesn't really have the music. And that's what the Activities app did with, you know, Watch 4, mm-hmm. OS 4. It allows you to link music to the Activities app. This linked the podcast to the exercise app. So now I need one that does all three, and you'll have it all in place.
Yeah, I don't think any of them actually allow you. Even Nike Run Club does not allow you to play music through that app. You have to launch it separately.
Yep.
And I don't know why, but anyway, cool. This is neat. Yeah, I saw this. This is a huge update for this app that came out this week. It was getting a lot of press. I'm glad you had a chance to mess with it, because I did not this week. So
it looks like the developer is David Smith. He's an independent iOS developer, and he's working with Mark Arment.
He is the
podcast guy. Yeah, on a new podcast for iOS development too.
Ooh, okay. So maybe we're going to see something cool there.
Yeah.
Well, that explains why podcasts is in this app.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Nice.
And then I got a Google notification of yesterday, and I clicked it, and the first one says, "Now you can listen to podcasts on your watch." I was like, "Oh, another one!" But it was actually this app, and they said, "Hey, if you like to exercise." Or if you don't like to exercise, you can trick the system. You actually have to have an exercise launched to have the podcast playing. But you can just launch an exercise and just sit around, right? And nothing will happen. The last cool thing is when you end the exercise in the Workouts Plus app, everything registers in your Activities app. In fact, the icon is actually the Watch Plus, the Workouts Plus app in your Activities app on your phone. So you can see, you know, usually it's a different icon based on the exercise. This has the icon for the app. So you can see when you launched it on app versus the native Activities app.
Neat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's really cool.
Yeah. There's a lot of neat stuff happening in the kind of workout area with the watch lately with different apps. Now this is a free app, right?
Yeah, it's free.
Totally free. No ads.
I haven't really seen an ad, I guess, to tell you the truth.
Wow, how are they being supported?
I don't know.
That's interesting.
He has the Sleep Plus and every other apps. So he's very prolific.
Pedometer Plus, Sleep Plus, Activity Plus, yeah.
Well, and then, you know, I think, Vincent, you sent the text message out this week, and I think there's a new app that you're going to develop called Slacker Plus. Because that was your response. I was like, Vincent, I'd love to do this app. Do you mind? He goes, no, I'm Slacker Plus right now. So,
yeah, you better get to that before Dave does. don't think there's a chance of that. Well, cool. Those are neat. Before I get to my review here, I'm going to do an update from the app I reviewed last week, which was called All the Rings. And I had a question about the app that I sent to the developer. His name is Dave Wood. My question was, when I select a workout, I thought the app would automatically determine what I needed to do to close my rings at that moment during the day. And it doesn't. But it does let you set the goal manually, right? So you can tell it what you want to do. When Dave got back to me, and here's what he had to say. He says, "Hi, Tom." He says, "The hit all goals versus hit any goal isn't quite what you're asking for. My workout app lets you set up 3 targets for any workout, time, energy, and distance, if that makes sense for the workout type. Then the all or any option is whether you want to hit all of the goals set or just any particular ones. When set to all, you'll be notified of completion when you hit the last goal, and any will notify you when you hit the first goal." So that clears it up. That makes sense. He goes, "Now for the feature you're actually looking for, the ability for your goals to be set to what you need to close your rings for the day is a feature I've wanted to add since I started working on the app. He goes, I kept pushing it off because I wasn't sure if people would find it confusing or not. But he says, your email has convinced me to finally put it in. I'll be submitting an update to Apple today that adds it. And by the way, I'd got the update. It came out this past week. If you update that app, it has that feature in it. He says, here's how it'll work. He says, and please let me know if you think this is confusing. When starting a workout on the watch, you can slide over to set the goals. If you force press on the goals screen and select auto set goals, that will calculate what you need to close the rings for the day. It will also set that workout type to always auto set until you manually change it. For example, if you go to an outdoor walk, select auto set goals, it'll figure out what you need for today to set the values you need. When you come back to do another outdoor walk tomorrow, it'll automatically recalculate your goals for that day. Everything is workout type specific though. So if you do an indoor walk next, it'll remember the goals you set last time. But it says you can turn on automatic goals for that workout type as well. Now he says, note also that I set the goals to one more than you actually need. So 31 minutes or 501 calories, mainly because he says, I've seen cases where the built-in activity app didn't award a completion when it was exactly on the nose, maybe because of rounding or whatever, but one extra is always safe. That's an interesting point to know, that it's sometimes good to go a little bit beyond to make sure you get it. So, and sure enough, that update came out this week. It's pretty cool. Just force press and there it is. And that's exactly what I was asking for. It's really cool. Thanks for updating that, Dave. This is a great companion to the activity app. So if you've ever wanted to just close your rings for the day and it's the middle of the day and you're not sure how much to do, one force press with this app will tell you exactly how far you need to run, walk, whatever the activity is you want to do. It'll let you know how long it's going to take to do. So very cool.
That's kind of neat. Yes.
Okay. So my review for this week, however, is an app called Visual Codes, and it's by Benjamin Mayo. And as someone who's worked in advertising and marketing and PR world for most of their life, I can really appreciate why Benjamin decided to call this app Visual Codes. If he called it what they really are, let's just say most people wouldn't bother to check it out. they already kind of have a preconceived notion of what they are based on a kind of a rather rough start that they had. And I'm talking about QR codes. That's what this is. Those bitmappy looking blocks of black and white that are nonsense to the human eye, but are a set of instructions for a camera on a phone. QR codes kind of got a bad rap when they kind of became the next big thing in advertising. Mm-hmm. For a while, then they kind of quickly faded away into obscurity for a bit. But do either of you know what QR actually stands for? You might know this, Vincent.
No, I don't actually. No?
Okay, it's quick response code.
I knew it was quick something.
Yeah, quick response. It was originally, I looked this up, it was originally created by a Japanese company back in 1994 to track vehicles during manufacturing. And then it kind of expanded to be used in all sorts of ways as kind of a shortcut to get to information. And the reason I remember that it sort of died off is that you needed a special app on your phone to use it. And the response rate for ads that we had them in them were terrible because no one's going to take the time to, first of all, look at your ad, second of all, download an app and then scan the code. It just wasn't going to happen. Yet at the time, all of our clients were asking for it because it was the hot new thing, right? But it basically didn't really work very well. Well, now, if you fast forward to today, with everybody having a state-of-the-art smartphone with these really amazing cameras, and especially the operating systems, iOS 11 can scan a code without the use of a special app. You just point your camera at it, and boom, it works. Okay, so that's one huge barrier gone. You know, Apple uses that Prometheus kind of version of this that's actually animated when you set up a new iPhone to kind of pair with the old iPhone. And that was actually introduced with the release of the Apple Watch, right? And those are visual codes. So I think they're kind of making a comeback here, which is kind of cool. So anyway, after that entire history lesson, you might want to check out this app called Visual Codes. It lets you create your own visual codes to do all sorts of cool things. You can open a URL link, you can search the web, you can compose an email, you can add a contact, a map location, call a phone number, connect to a Wi-Fi. You can do all these sort of things. So I created one for our website. You do this on the phone version of the app. You simply select, the type was URL link. So tap that, you type in the web address, you give it a name, and boom, there's your code. The codes show up on the Apple Watch app. And so I opened it up on the watch, looked at the code, and then I scanned that with my phone, and a message popped up saying, open website. If you tap on that, it launched our website on the phone. So it works, and it's pretty much instantaneous. And now you can also change the color of these. They have several, three or four different color settings, so not just default black and white. You can put some of them in colors. And you can also use Siri to open the codes as well. So if you just say, hey, you know who, show my visual code, and it will open them up for you. Also, you can, right from within the app on the phone, you can tap, it's a scan QR code, and you can scan any code you find anywhere and save it in your library. So it's very handy and useful if you can collect the ones that you need, you know, to use as a quick response. Now, the app is free, but it's $1.99 if you want to share or print the codes. So basically, it's $1.99, because that's really the only way to make it useful, but it's only a couple of bucks. It's kind of cool. It's kind of neat. So check it out. It's called Visual Codes. It's a neat thing. They're coming back, I'm telling you. They're making a comeback.
Yeah. I read an article by a guy who made a coaster for his coffee table with his QR code for a guest to come over and want to get on his Wi-Fi.
Perfect.
And
that's exactly what this does. There's an actual setting for Wi-Fi. You tap it, and it gives access to your Wi-Fi. So if anybody asks, you just call it up on your watch, say, scan this, and they're instantly on Wi-Fi. That's pretty neat. I saw a really cool one. It was in the front window of a storefront. It was a small, you know, these small little mom and pop shops, and they had this display window. And the only thing in the window was this giant quilt that was made as a QR code.
Oh, wow.
And if you scan it, it went to the website and it says coming soon. And it was a sewing or quilt store. And I thought that was the coolest thing, that they use technology with something old fashioned like sewing and quilting, right? That was neat.
That's neat.
So there's a lot of neat things you can do with it. So check that out. All right. So that's app reviews. Kind of running out of time here for listener feedback. So I guess we'll just kind of wrap this up for the year. So anything else before we force press to end this episode? And I mean the force press to end this episode.
And that's 2017.
And there we go. Well, that's all the time we have for this episode. Thank you, Vincent and Chris, for being here all year long. I really do appreciate it. And thank you to everyone out there for listening. If you'd like to support our show, check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/AppleWatchCast. It's a great way to help us to continue to produce this show. So check it out at patreon.com/AppleWatchCast. Links to some of the stuff we talk about on our show can be found on our website at applewatchcast.com. You can subscribe to us at iTunes, and don't forget to post a review while you're there. If you have a question about the Apple Watch or about our show, send us an email at comments@applewatchcast.com, and we'll try to address it here on the show. Look for us and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and all the rest. Have a great week. As always, thanks for listening. Until our next show, you're on your own time.
Remember to rate us 5 stars on iTunes.